Hello there, and welcome to the Movies in Focus podcast. I'm Niall Brown. Based on E.O. Chiravici's novel, The Book of Mirrors, Sleeping Dogs is a twisty and entertaining thriller starring the mighty Russell Crowe. Crowe plays Roy Freeman, a former cop undergoing treatment for Alzheimer's disease, who starts to dig into an old case in the hopes of exonerating an innocent man. The type of film that used to be Hollywood's bread and butter, Sleeping Dogs' impressive cast also includes Karen Gillan and Tommy Flanagan. Adam Cooper, the screenwriter behind films such as Tower Heist, Exodus, Gods and Kings, and Assassin's Creed, makes his directorial debut with Sleeping Dogs. Adam joined the Movies in Focus podcast to talk about making the film, working with Russell Crowe, shooting a US-set movie in Australia, and much more. As always, I hope you enjoy what we have to talk about.
Hiya, Adam. How's it going?
Good, mate. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you for taking the time today.
Thank you for taking the time. I gather you probably also watched the movie, so that's 2 hours less of your life that you have.
I watched it this afternoon, and I thought it was great. I grew up sort of in the 80s and the 90s, in a time where you sort of had those kind of potboiler thrillers, and this was very much in that realm, which is a genre that I love, and I don't get to see enough condensed into 2 hours anymore.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
So was that the intention, to make an old school sort of thriller?
I mean, I too grew up in the 80s and 90s, but I imagine I'm a bit older than you are.
Probably not that much.
I'm 52.
I'm 43, almost 44.
All right. Yeah, I mean, I love, without starting specific movies, but you'll probably know the movies that I'm referring to when I cite the filmmakers. Like, I love Alan Parker and Adrian Lyne and Scorsese, of course. And I think that they've made movies that I think this, you know, there are certainly elements from the films that this film apes in certain ways. But I wouldn't say that I set out to make something that was so much of a deliberate throwback per se. I think that might have been the result of just some cinematic choices that were made, but I don't think I ever sort of said to like my production design team or my cinematographer that I wanted to, you know, deliberately sort of mirror any of those films. And it's interesting because you're not the first person who said that. You know, that it feels like that. And I don't know whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, or whether that's just neutral.
It's a very good thing, Adam. It's a very good thing.
So why? Tell me why. Tell me why.
I think that sort of mid-budget sort of thriller experience is now sort of 8 episodes on Netflix or whatever it might be. And I think you get, those stories can be great, don't get me wrong, but you can always tell there's at least 90 minutes in that eight hours of filler. Whereas, you know, something what Sleeping Dogs is, it's constructed in a way that there is an arc that pays off kind of at every stage.
Yeah.
So I mean, that's why I like sort of those stories as movies, not just, yes, don't get me wrong, I enjoy the longer form, but yeah, there's a skill to making a movie, not just sort of going, well, I can do this in 8 hours or whatever it might be.
Right. Fair enough. Cool.
So, and that's why I like it. And I mean, you mentioned Alan Parker there, and sort of when you mentioned it, I thought there are aspects of Angel Heart sort of woven into it, sort of not the supernatural aspect, but the construction, without giving too much away, but the sort of the detail of how the story unfolds.
And that was a movie that I definitely talked about with Russell when we were first getting to know each other.
It's one of my favorite Alan Parker films and favorite Mickey Rourke films. So.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Speaking of Russell, I mean, Russell Crowe, fantastic actor, lead of your movie. How did he become attached to it, and how did that work, sort of getting him?
My former agent at ICM, who then went and became a manager following the merger with ICM and CAA, he was formerly an assistant at the William Morris Agency, on Russell's then agent's desk. So George Freeman then went and became a manager, and my my agent was still very close with George, and he sent the script to George and told me, I'm going to send it to George for Russell Crowe. I was like, yeah, like that'll happen. Which is, I guess, a cynicism born of doing this too long. And then called me and said, Russell read the script and really likes it and he wants to meet. So that happened in, I would say, April of 2022. And I think I finally talked to Russell in July of 2022. And we had a Zoom where the connection was terrible because he lives on a farm kind of in the middle of nowhere. And the internet's not great. And then it became a phone call. By August of 2022, he had attached to it. And that sort of became, his attachment sort of became the basis of kind of our foreign sales package, because we pre-sold a lot of the movie. And then I went to Australia in November of 2022.
Well, that's the other thing, because I was watching the film and I was surprised that it was shot in Australia, because it's a New York movie. I presume that's sort of where it's set. How does all that come about? What's that like for when somebody goes, yeah, we're shooting in Australia as a director? Yeah. Tell me how that
it was hard for me to wrap my head around it, honestly, in the beginning, because it's actually written, the original script was written as Pittsburgh in the winter. Right. So you could see like somebody's breath. It was meant to be very kind of bleak and cold. And I wanted sort of the environment to mirror kind of the present tense experience of Russell's character. And then, you know, Russell had spent a lot of 2022 traveling elsewhere and hadn't been home a lot. And he didn't want to travel. I sort of spoke to the team, and my producer, Mark Fasano, my producing partner, Mark Fasano, had made the film Land of Bad in Gold Coast in Australia, and had a sense of Australia and says there are lots of looks that you can get that can sort of mirror sort of an American city. So it was less about, the issues were less about finding locations, and more about when we started shooting the film, it was an Australian summer. It was Melbourne in the summer. And Melbourne already has very unpredictable weather. I don't know if you know the band Crowded House, but they have a song called Four Seasons in One Day. And that song is about Melbourne, because it's sunny one minute and 15 minutes later it's raining, and then it's sunny again, and then it's windy, and it's really unpredictable. So I think the biggest challenge, though, with shooting in Melbourne, and you'll notice from watching the film, there's it's not an exterior heavy film, right? But the exteriors that we do have, we had to be very particular about when we shot during the day, because the light can be pretty harsh, and didn't feel like winter in Pittsburgh. So I think with wardrobe, I mean, Russell's in a wool beanie and a heavy coat a lot of the film. I think it probably suggests fall in an American city.
Yeah,
but it was definitely something that we constantly had to be advocating for time and place.
Yeah, I mean, and it's sort of flawless in how it plays out, because I think I was towards the end of the film, or the film had ended, and I was like, yeah, this is Australian, or, you know, and I'd looked it up, you know, and I was sort of surprised, you know, and again, yeah. a lot of the actors, I mean, you've got Tommy Flanagan, who worked with Russell Crowe on Gladiator, presumably that was his sort of, you know, decision or suggestion.
It was, so when we were, I was up on Russell's farm, and we were talking about actors for the other parts, and Russell pitched Tommy.
And Karen Gillan, who's also Scottish,
yeah,
they're all playing American. What's that like as a director, sort of juggling? Whilst in Australia?
yeah, right. Well, we cast Karen before we cast Tommy. So it was really coincidental, the sort of the Scottishness of it. You know, it was, I think everybody kind of, Tommy, I think, tried to follow Russell's lead as it related to sort of, you know, tone and way of speaking. But I think Tommy is so Scottish that there's kind of no getting away from his Scottish. And at a certain point in time, I wanted to just embrace that. Because we live in a country where there's lots of people with lots of different accents who work in all different fields. you know, Karen was kind of doing her own thing. She was doing sort of, you know, she had a little bit of sort of like an elevated intellectual way of speaking. You know, so, you know, and then, you know, Martin Csokis is a Kiwi. He's half a New Zealander, half Hungarian. And his way of speaking, he kind of sounds like an Englishman, honestly, like his natural way of speaking. And what he chose to do was he wanted to do like a really kind of East Coast, almost Alan Alda type accent with his character. So there was a real kind of melting pot of accents kind of going on in the movie.
As a director, what is that like when the actor comes to you and it goes, I'm playing Brooklyn, I'm playing whatever, and you're like, well, can you do it? I mean, how do you feel when that's all coming towards you?
I loved that, honestly, because you know, as much as it's my job to sort of be the master of the story, like I love it wouldn't be a collaborative experience if I was dictating, you're going to talk like this and you're going to talk like this. Like, I think you get the best out of people when they're making it their own, right? Everybody's contributing to telling the story. And yeah, it's my job to make sure that each of those things can sort of gel and sort of fit together. But I love that and sort of welcome that, same way as I did from my DP and my production designer and makeup and wardrobe. Like, you know, it's, we have a creative meeting and then it's like, okay, go take this and do what you're going to do with that, you know? And I'm really, grateful for the people that I had around me.
And you mentioned the phrase sort of master of the story, and you're a writer. This is your first time directing.
Yeah.
For a story that's so twisty, and obviously it's based on existing sort of source material, but for a film that's so twisty and well constructed, how do you keep a track of making sure that's flawless throughout not only the shooting of it, but the post-production as well?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, it's said that as when you're making a movie, you get to tell the story three times. I think as a writer director, that's especially true. I mean, because you get to tell the story once when you write it, one time when you're directing it, and a third time when you're putting it all together. And you know, I think that given sort of the nature of what the twisty narrative is, I kind of had to be sort of pretty locked down on what that was in the script stage. I mean, it certainly shifted in the lead up to production, some of the elements and some of the explanation of sort of the various mysteries that are unfolding. But it had to be pretty locked down in the script phase. But I was really frequently tested on that narrative because, you know, it's, as you know, it's a movie that's sort of set up in chapters, and it kind of speaks to this notion that sort of the truth on any given incident is really a point of view. Yeah. Right? Your memory of something is never really a memory of how it actually went down. And so I was frequently sort of tested by the actors who had to play the parts and say the words, where they would ask questions about what's the backstory here. So we were constantly really revisiting it. So it was, you know, it is twisty though. You're right.
Yeah. And all the better for it. You know, and again, there's so much simplicity in films now that it's nice to have a bit of sort of complexity where you're going, right, there are these different threads. How do they weave together? And sort of,
yeah, right. The hope is always that It's complex but not complicated.
Yes, I was like,
Right?
a very good description, because you are guessing up until kind of the end, really, because all the characters have a play that
Yeah.
you're trying to figure out where that ball is under the cup, so to speak.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Just finally, one last question. This is your first film as a director. You're doing the PR thing at the minute.
Yeah.
Have you got anything else lined up for film number two as a director?
I'm working on a new feature script, which is sort of kind of elevated, I guess you would call it sort of elevated sci-fi, but it's sort of structured kind of in a mosaic form, not unlike a movie like Traffic or Babel or Syriana. Yeah, it has like dramatic underpinnings to it. It's a story of a woman who's really on a quest to save her own life and finds out something much bigger. So it's a bigger movie, but the emotional story of it is pretty contained.
Well, I look forward to that, and I'll sort of wrap things up now. Say thank you, Adam. It's been a pleasure talking to you about a film that I really did enjoy watching. That,
Oh,
again,
thanks so much, Kyle.
it's like something
Thank
I don't get enough of when I w watch movies these days.
you. I'm happy to hear that. Thanks, man. Be good.
I hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Movies in Focus podcast. You can download it wherever you get your podcasts, and I hope that you tell your friends about it. That's it for this time. And I'll see you at the movies.